Hallo, hallo.
I'm very, very happy to see all of you here. Congratulations to you, Alex, to make that happen. We waited for that event to take place for a very long time.
For a very long time, of that, yeah.
Okay. So, the purpose of this session is to talk about operations. We know that operating a mobility service is a great challenge. It's very, very challenging, very rewarding. We know why we are, you know why you all are doing it. There are things that are predictable. We know everything that will need to be done every single day. But there are also unknowns, unpredictable things happening. And we need to put in place certain organizations, certain processes to take care of that. So we will focus on different topics here. Feel free to add some you may have on your side. The idea is that we follow a chronological order from when a new customer tries to register until we have something bad happening on the car, in the service, or bandits, etc. at the end of the chain, and see how, well, for WeShare and for WeBo, things have been put in place to try to mitigate those risks. Alright? So, that's right. Well, maybe you can introduce yourself so everybody knows you, if that's not the case. Which would you also want to start?
Hello everybody, I'm so happy to be here. I've learned already a lot and it's very motivating to share a room with all the guys who have the same challenges and maybe also success. My name is Nicole Pasewald. I'm working for Shortcut is UMI, Urban Mobility International, but our product's name is WeShare. At the moment, we have 2,000 cars and divided in a fleet in Berlin, more than 1,000 cars and around 800 in Hamburg. We are offering 100% electric car sharing from beginning on. We launched in the early 2019 in Berlin, and then around 2 years later in Hamburg already. So I'm a product owner at the moment at UMI. I'm a typical operational guy, to be honest. So I worked for 5 years at Car2Go as a fleet operator for the north part of Europe. And that was also the case to change to UMI because of fully electric car sharing. Therefore, my heart was bumping. And then short before launch, we had this collaboration with Vuloc, and I really wanted to have both product and electric car sharing, the operational belongings together. So I changed to product, and now I'm supporting UMI for 2 years. So somehow translate operational needs into product needs. And that's why we met each other.
You made it by some things together, and I'm very proud of what you guys achieved in Germany.
Hi, good afternoon to everybody. I would also like to thank you, Vuloc, for organizing these couple of days. It's been, it is amazing to be able to share experiences here within a sector like ours, which is almost new, like 10 years, or maybe a bit more, but not much. Thank you very much. I am the Chief Operating Officer in WeBo. My colleague Raul explained already the company, but just in case, we are 50% owned by Repsol, the oil and gas company. Or if they hear me saying oil and gas, they are not going to like it. They would rather say me energy sector. I'm 50% Kia. We operate a fleet of 500 cars, PHEV, Kia Niros, and our city is Madrid.
All right, with is to understand from you how you are screening the flow of incoming potential customers, so new registering users. What are the criteria you're using to say, okay, this person is worth accessing my vehicles, my service? How do I trust them? Where do you put the barriers to protect your operational teams, your business, your revenues as well? So yeah, let's review the registering process and how you try to protect everything that's behind it.
To me, the first thing here is to understand that there are clients that don't interest you. I mean, at the beginning, when the company was created, Webull was in a status where we wanted clients, we wanted users, so we wanted everyone. But now it comes to a point where when the maturity evolves, that you realize that you don't want all these users. So that's the first thing to realize, that maybe you don't want everybody. Then the thing is to be able to analyze in terms of, for example, accident rate. What are the key factors that affect the accident rate, such as, for example, the age of the users that they have, the moment where they take the car. Maybe if it's on Friday evening or Saturday evening, it's going to be more risky than obviously on Monday morning. If they take the car in a place that is full of discos, for example, or if they end in a place they like I mentioned, so there are kind of factors that affect the accident rate that is important to study. And then the thing is, how do you balance? Because the solution is not, okay, I don't want to get rid of all the people below 25 years old. I don't want to get rid, I'm not going to close the service between 10 p.m. and 10 a.m. So the challenge here is to find the balance between the actions that you take to be able to mitigate this accident rate and the revenues decrease that you suffer. So I think that's a challenge that we're facing right now.
Yeah, exactly. This is a challenge. I can remember when before we launched, we built up kind of expert teams, and there were a lot of people who already worked for car sharing companies or shared mobility, something else. So I had the impression that from the beginning on, we really knew that there will be some fraudster, right? So fake accounts, for example. Or what should we do with very young driver? So this is also causing a lot of damage and so costs. And that's why we started from beginning on to have an eye on the validation of the customer, so verification of the data. So we compare, for example, driver's license with the ID card. Very strict if they're similar, if there's a zero instead of an O or whatever. So we have some certain KPIs, what we want really to tackle and what could be critical. And we also check sometimes during the registration this liveness check, so that we're using moving pictures instead of just a picture. I can remember in the early stage of car sharing, we just wanted to have a picture, and then they made a picture of the cup of the grandma, right? Because it was an adult, and he didn't recognize, but it was a valid picture, and it was approved from the system. That's why now we really rely on this liveness check, and if there is some irregularity, then we go to the validation that they got a call, right? And they have to speak with a human. So, and we did this from beginning on beside the liveness check, but I guess there's still some space for improvements. So we still have some, I'm honest for that. So there's still some fake accounts, for example, or in the past, our customer were able to change their addresses on their own, and we also improved that. So for some purposes when they want to change the email address or the address or the last name, because after they're married they have to contact the customer service and they can change something in their profile instead of the customer. So there are a lot of things that you already can consider during the registration, and I guess we're not at the end, but I'm pretty sure we're on a good way.
We know, well, we spoke about customer acquisition and that we want to attract more and more users, of course, and we need to find the right balance between acquiring customers and acquiring good customers. And that's why I'm asking you this, and can you tell us a bit more in terms of automation, how automated the approval process is to access your service? We spoke also about the need for registration process to be quick and easy, as quick as possible. Ideally, you download the app, you register, and a few minutes later, you're in the car. But we know it represents also risks. So do you want to dig a bit deeper there in terms of automation? How automatic the approval process is? Or did you decide on the contrary to deactivate any kind of automation because you want to keep control yourself on the validation of each and every profile?
Our registration process more or less takes 10 minutes. I just asked my colleague Manolo, who is here, who is in charge of product, and I said, how long does it take? I mean, because I know it's like really fast, but 10 minutes. So the idea here is to be able to do it really fast. I remember when car sharing started in Madrid before Webo, that I needed to go to register to, where you learn to drive. You had to show your driving license there, and they gave you a check, but presentially, they gave you a check, and then you can start it driving with Car2Go, I think it was. So since then to here, I think it has improved quite a lot. We also have this proof of life that you said, in order to try to avoid this kind of fraud. But for us, it's kind of working because it's really fast. Our intention is that the user can be able to use the car as fast as possible, not to be anything complicated. And for us, it's working good.
Is the situation a bit more, are you more careful than we were when it comes to
It is not that we're not careful.
But in 10 minutes, I think,
I guess it's 10 minutes, 5 or 20. I guess if the system is really reliable, right, that the data are stored correctly and read out correctly, and you implemented somehow the business rules behind that, then it's fine. So I guess it's not really much more longer in our process. And as I said, if doing the liveness check or something else, something didn't match, then from kind of call center, somebody's calling and validate this from face to face. Yeah, it's all digital. I guess it's the same, it's 15 or 20 minutes, too long. But what we cannot check within this first automatic registration is we have some business rules internally, right? So we decided, for example, the insurance is one of the biggest costs that you have if you provide car sharing or in general have a big fleet. And you have to decide, who's welcome? So everybody's welcome, right? We want to have each customer, but if the customer causes more costs than we could gain some revenue, then we have to cut on a certain extent. And that's why, that's why decided, if you saw this insurance reports, that customers between 21 and 25 causes a lot of damages and very expensive damages. And it was really a pain point internally. I can remember 4 years ago, we decided then as a compromise, we start with 21. So at least in Germany, the drivers have then 3 years driver experiences when they made the driver's license was 18. Yeah. Otherwise, the minimum requirement is they have to have their driver's license at least 1 year. And so might be that we lost a lot of customer between 18 and 21, but yeah, if we observe carefully our damage cost, then I guess it was the right decision. And sometimes we would also like to reconsider this decision, maybe to increase the age, but I'm pretty sure that marketing and growth are not really happy about that. Yeah, so back to your question, so if we go to the fully automatic registration, and if we would change something, or to be more precise on that, yeah, I would really like to check if they're 21, because the system is, I don't know if they're really calculating the age of the customer, they're just validating the data, if they're reliable, and if the driver's license is a European driver's license, because we only accept Europeans or European customer, and all these business rules are not really covered from our current registration process. Therefore, we built now internally some automations. So we grab the data of the customer, and they run through self-made automations to verify, okay, do we have a customer who's very similar to another one? And sometimes, from time to time, we detect, okay, the same customer, the same human, has 3 or 5 accounts.
So that would be once the customer or customers are registered successfully, then you have additional checks running on the user.
Yeah. And these are the typical fake accounts, right? So sometimes they're running through, I don't know, but that's why we build up internal processes. But this is always a mess, right? To have some automations running, they are not always really reliable, and you have to check them manually if there's a result, right? Then a human has to review it and check if it's really the case that we have one customer with 5 different accounts. So this is a mess of work. That's why there's the space for improvement.
All right. Are there any questions around registration process and how you want to secure the quality of the incoming users? I see yes, so let's talk for a minute with just the questions and then we move on to the next topic. Do you want to start there?
You mentioned 10 minutes. It's the time for the approval, complete approval. So you rely on purely automatic, basically, check, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You start entering your data until you are able to check.
And what space is it compared to the risk of accepting, basically, of not having the systems properly filtering, basically?
But they are filtering. I mean, that's why I was joking with him, because they are. I mean, we have technology, as she said, we also have a technology that gives you a proof of life that compares the selfie that you're having is not a real selfie. It is based on 8 points, and it makes sure that you are moving. So they make sure that you are a real person, and then they compare it with your ID or whatever you're using. So the thing is, that we have worked here to try to be as much as efficient as possible, but without losing reliability.
Sorry, you mentioned that there are certain situations where the same user have 5 accounts. Yeah, but I don't know what is the business rule that you validate. Don't you, every single user will have a unique ID? So is the ID one of the key criteria in the user verification? Because you can change your name, you can change your birthday, but at some point
exactly.
You can't come up with 5 different IDs.
That's true, but sometimes also systems could fail, and that's what I mentioned before. We detected the PARS, it's a long time ago now, yeah, but it was only one example. When we started to do that the system sometimes is reading an O instead of a 0, or vice versa. And this could be the only thing, right? Like a typo. And before we started this liveness check, we had these cases with these pictures, yeah, from the grandma, for example. So we have quick learnings, and at the moment we are satisfied so far. But we also want to include in this automatic registration process also our business rules. And at the moment, it's very manual. Yeah, but from the quality, it's fine so far. We are satisfied.
No, you're right. When we in the registration process, what we definitely don't admit is a temporal driving license. And right now, since I don't know how months ago, we don't admit without 2 years experience. So I think it's over 20. That's automatic in the registration process. The rest of the factors are. No, it's not. It's from the driving's license.
Okay, so the year.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Exactly.
What happens if you lose your license? So, can you get a new license? Does the date still go back?
I don't know exactly how the driving license is, but for sure that it is written. When did you get it? When did you get it first time?
You can't adapt to that. Every time you give you one, the
date. So you never know when.
That's
It's an issue. We are 10 minutes with standard, with a Spanish driving license, with a Spanish ID. And with Europe, we're fine, but we also admit not only Europe, but worldwide. And for those, they have to call call center, our call center, in order to double check something. So for those that are not part of the standard process, we have improved the standard process as much as possible, but we didn't. We don't have money for everything, so we have to choose where to allocate our money. And the exceptions, it's okay to do them manually. So that's the way we do it.
The 80-20 ratio, I guess. So we want the 80%.
Yeah, that's true. That's why we also reduced it to the European driver's licenses. And we still have one single case, I guess, in Europe. I don't know. I'm not sure. But we changed 10 or 15 years ago to the plastic driver's license. And before everybody, it was paper, right? This special paper. So they still have sometimes this paper driver's licenses. And these are always the cases when it forward to a human, so customer support, and they have to check that, right? Because they are not these security holograms and all the stuff. So there's always manual effort, but due to the fact students exactly. So this is really mean because we really want to have them, but yeah, therefore we also cut somewhere and we reduce it to the European driver's license. And in Berlin we have a lot of foreigners.
It's the system, does it? So he knows how to recognize certain amounts of what you put in the system, and then if it's out, you should
exactly. Yeah, and it works quite good.
All right, let's move on to the next part. Now that we have trustworthy customers in the system, or guess what, these customers, some of them have accidents or damage to the cars, but we still know them. But we need to take care of those damages, so how much damage management or repair in general is impacting the availability of your fleet? How do you set the threshold above which you want to engage repair work, or how acceptable it is to keep a small scratch on the car, or do you want to fix that every single time? tell us a bit more about your strategy around damages.
I can also start, sorry. yeah, I love this topic, right? Because it has so many exceptions. So how we can start? It depends on the damage and depends on the fleet, on the model, and the insurance package and everything. So, and even if it's a leasing car or if you bought the cars, right? So you have to make decisions what you want to repair, if it's a casco damage or not, whatever. So
do you have full insurance or do you have third party liability? Your insurance.
Yeah, at casco we have both, but okay. Casco starts at 50,000 euro. But let's talk about damages first, because otherwise it's I'm talking for ages. So we have a team of four educated body shop masters, I can call it like that, so real experts. And we also manage the damage with Vuelog. So what's quite comfortable that we are able to provide the customer now pictures of the damage instead of a description, because in the past it was a mess for the customer. They really have the need to go, to drive, they have an appointment, whatever, and they don't want to go circling around the car, check all damages, check a list. Yeah, if this damage is really there, if somebody really delete the existing damage after a workshop repair. So that's why we're providing now pictures to the customer in our customer app if they want to drive, and also the fleet agent could provide us some pictures of the damages. But what it's still manually, the guys have to check this, if this is a valid damage. Maybe we have a double report, so that the same dent or damage is reported twice already, then they have to delete this, that we could also always provide the current situation of the car, condition of the car. We decided that we only want to have new damages for sure, and they should be smaller from the customer, smaller than a palm. For sure, there could be also a hole in the door, yeah. But because of the big amount of reported damages, we reduced it to that, yeah. And so each car is maybe touched 4 or 5 times per month due to charging of the electric fleet, and that's why our service provider is delivering more or less the quality of damage reports than the customer. The customer reports a damage before the rental, so maybe it's hit from a bicycle maybe, so he's not responsible, or he's calling after driving, right? So because of an accident, whatever.
If I may, it raises a question about your ability to recover the cost related to those damages made potentially by the customers. Can you quantify approximately how much of those euros spent on repair you can recover from the customers?
Unfortunately, the quota is extremely low. So it's, I guess, you know, everybody, it's really hard to know which customer caused this damage. But at least we try to get this information from the last driver. So if there's something happened. And I'm also allowed to say that in 150 cars, we have a damage kind of detector, a sensor, who's giving us an advice. Okay, there might be an accident because of reducing speed, whatever, or this, it was a bit bumpy or shaky. Then it's much more easier to contact the driver and say, okay, was there something? And sometimes they're really surprised. Oh, yes, I hit a bumper or whatever. This makes much more easier to detect damages, but otherwise we are lost. So this is the coverage of the cost is extremely low. Yeah, so that's why we have to invest more in prevention. This sender thing is really it's helping, but it also costs some money to implement that. And but it would be our vision to contact the customer in real time, not during driving, but maybe afterwards. Okay, there is an event, please, we send them automatically a damage report and he can reply. So this would be the future for us.
For us, well, the way that we approach damages mainly started when we switched the insurance from full coverage to third party. So this is when we started taking actions, when we realized how big this thing was. And so we are working like, in several work lines. The first one would be to try to decrease as much as possible, to try to prevent as much as possible the accident. And I'm going back to what I said, for example, cutting this 2 first years from your driving, not allowing 18 and 19 years old people coming into your company is a measure that we have proof that is profitable. Because when we analyze the risk factor of this group in Webull, it was huge. So we have a working line in that direction of analyzing how can we decrease the accidents that our customer has. Then the second line would be when you have a crash, when you have an accident. To try to repair it as cheap as possible. So this is why we are working in trying to do in-house as much as possible. Actually, we had we also work with workshops, but for the big things. But we're trying to do as many things as possible in-house. We also do as Amir said, we also we also buy our total loss cars in order to get all the spare parts and then reuse them in our cars. So we are intensively working in that line of trying to reduce the repairing costs. Then the third line would be to be able to identify who has made the damage to the car, because we all know that this is quite a difficult thing. We wish we could go and check the car after every single trip, but of course it is impossible. Not only to check the car, also to clean it, but but it's not possible. So we are also working in that line. We're working with a technological partner in order to be able to identify when a crash happens in our car. So we get a pop-up and we know that something happened to that car. So we are trying to. We're improving in that line. And then the last one would be the most important is not only to identify the drivers, also to be able to charge them and to recover the debt, which unfortunately, as you said, is quite complicated. So we are also working with recovery agencies in order to try to get it as much as possible, but it's a tough work, yeah, definitely.
Any question about damage management?
Yep.
Okay.
You mentioned before a device in 150 vehicles. Are you able to share more about that? What device it is, who the vendor is, things like that?
We're still proving the technology. So we can't say that it is working super well. What we can definitely say is that we are quite confident at the moment. That because we have proved, we have tried different technologies, and our problem here has been to be able to distinguish what is important to what is not. I mean, we don't want 3 alerts per day per car, and we also don't want only 1 alert per year, because that alert for sure that I'm going to know what's going to happen because the car is not going to be able to move. So. To find the right partner here is not easy. It's not easy. So this is why this is one of our work lines. Because yeah, it's not easy.
I guess the big challenge is for small and medium damages. Big ones, you know,
the car is
destroyed. You're alerted. The customer calls. The police calls. Okay, you know. But small ones, this is where it's more challenging because no one reports them.
Exactly.
The next driver may not notice it before starting the trip, the next trip, so it's difficult, I guess, to track back who was responsible for that one, right?
Exactly. And these kind of things, even if you don't get finally paid, which obviously we have to work in that line, but I think that they are positive because what can't be happening is that you have a user that is doing a bad use, a misuse of your car, and nothing happens to him. I mean, because they usually, the people that do that kind of things on purpose, which are the most dangerous, obviously, they have friends that do the same kind of things. So if one of them do this thing once and nothing happened to him because the car sharing company doesn't contact him, doesn't charge him anything, doesn't kick him out, he's going to talk to his friends and he's going to say, hey, you can take a car sharing car because nothing is going to happen to you. So it's also not only about recovering the money, which of course, but it's also about decreasing this kind of accident rate.
Yes.
What we would ask for. So this is funny because I already had some exchange with Cariad. This is a special chapter or company also as a Volkswagen subsidiary. Sorry. And this is their core competence, now to find out if they manufacture cars that are already ready to for sharing. And they asked me, okay, in a perfect world, how does it look like? And so an external telematic is not any longer needed for sure, right? This also prevents some fraud. If you have the right guys into the car, they exactly know how to reconnect the car from the telematics or interrupt the connection, and everything belongs to the connection. Should be more focused on the SIM card in the car instead of CAN bus and telematic connection in terms of fraud, for example. But I'm not sure if this really answers your question. So I don't know how far you wanted to go.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you have talked about spare parts, for example, how easy it is to reduce some part from one car from another. I don't know. One idea, for example, the same door, it could be useful for the four doors behind the car. Maybe I have.
You're completely right. So there are a lot of ideas that we have, and I guess everybody of you as well. It referred to the telematics, the spare parts. So Volkswagen already do that, right? We have this MIB platform. So a lot of cars have the same platform, only the design is different. But yeah, the design is a door, right? So they don't look all the same. I guess even if we talk to them and they would change something, this is not something that we could expect in the next 5 years for car sharing. They wanted to be ready for robocars or autonomous driving, right? So that's why we have to consider this sensor, cameras, and all the stuff. This is much more exciting for them or important, because I've, at least my impression is that they don't want to invest too much more in shared cars in terms of car sharing instead of what the future is, the robocars and the autonomous driving. Mm.
Jane.
Does both of your fleets, all the cars equipped with dash cam?
No.
That helps, because for us, our fleet, we only started equipping the dash cam, it's a state of mind. So when people knew that there's dash cam, automatically the accidents get a little bit more controlled.
How's it built in the car?
It's not built, it's external.
It's not what?
So I call it
that. It's external.
I call it that.
But they could remove it.
Separately, but the cost of the dash cam has decreased over the years. So for the first 5 years of our operation, no dash cam. Only end of last year, I started to implement. But it helps a lot. It's just that then you need to have guys who keep looking at those damn videos. You know, because...
They don't damage it, or they don't grab it and go out, or...
So when they grab it and go, you know already the last guy who removed the camera. And of course, you don't put the wiring. You link the wiring so that it is not easy for them to cut it. And you have to make sure you seal the SIM card, you know. Mm. But that helps them, because automatically there's already a drop on certain accidents. And some of them, when they push at you and you check with the video, you have the evidence.
And how do users accept that they have a camera inside the car?
But it's facing outside, not inside.
Oh, okay.
So it's perfectly, well, in my country, it's perfectly legit. And it is very helpful for third-party claims.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, It's true, it's referring to outside, but it's still tracking your route, right? So you don't have a card, so a map, but you can exactly see when he was where and what he did so far.
Yeah,
so I'm not sure.
Without a dash cam, I know where he is at any point in time, it doesn't make a difference. Even the Bullock system will tell you exactly where he is, because of the telemetry box.
Yes, but we cannot track it. So in case of accident,
We can track it if we want, but that's not the line.
It's only in Singapore.
Yeah. So we had to change this. We also can see the trip, but only as a bird line, instead of exactly knowing when he turned left and right and so on, instead of a line from A to B. So German law.
It's very useful, because when you're driving, not significant accidents, but when there's an impact on the camera, you will see the thing shake, so you know exactly, you can pinpoint.
The idea, I think, is great. Actually, we did a trial with a dash camera company in order to try to prove it. It didn't work, but it wasn't because of the concept, because I really trust in that concept. I think that it didn't work because the technology that they were offering was not very good, because we had a lot of vandalism and they were not able to identify if it was that they stole the camera, or if it was that it just wasn't working. So we had a lot of issues with that. But I guess that it was not about the idea, which I think for sure will work. It was more related to the specific provider that we were trying. Yeah, but I think it's really interesting.
You can try. The price of the camera dropped a lot.
Jen, can we ask you approximately what is the cost per car per month?
If I'm not wrong, it's about $250. It's a one-off cost. So you buy the camera, so it's a one-time investment that you have to...
Well, it's not connected, so you don't send the pictures to a server, you keep everything
no,
in the car.
No, so, but anyway, when you trigger the event, when it's a significant, for my fleet, at any one point in time, there will be, every car will be touched at least once a week. So the SD card can store up to 7 days of memory.
This was my next question, and what's about the power consumption? So how this is built in?
It draws from the telco battery, so it's minimal.
Does it take a video or just pictures?
It continues. It's a whole video, and it's really high speed quality. So it's not the kind that you see already, you want to puke kind. You know, but it's really clear.
Yeah,
it's really clear. I can give you the brand, but I don't represent them.
Are you sure you want to know where your users are really good? You want to see that?
No, but you trust me, you won't have time to see so many. And seriously, there's really a lot. I pity the guy who sits there and keep watching the video. It's a then mundane job, but it helps a lot because sometimes when people go into the car, they see that there's a camera, they aha, you know what I mean? They already, the state of mind is really, okay, I better behave.
So it's more prevention than anything else.
But it helps, to be avoid. Oh, but they know, so your fake one needs to say that start recording, you know?
We spoke a lot about car sharing. We have also two-wheelers operators here. So are these constraints different? I'm looking at the Fruity team, at you also, Arthur, for moped, for bicycles, for scooters. Do you see any kind of difference in the management of damages in general, or prevention of damages?
Yeah, because for ourselves in the aerosol, we have pictures taken from the fleet management for all sides of the scooters every time they go check. So we know exactly what are the damages in between the checks that have been done by the team. And we have an alert when there is a fault. So we know exactly when there is an accident, who was the user, if it was in the tree, if it wasn't a tree. So it was kind of emergency processes within the team. And so we can actually bill the customer because we have our own third insurance. So we know who is responsible. And so I think 90% of the reparation we make are billed actually to the customer. So it's actually a source of revenue for us.
Excel.
On our side, we operate a fleet of scooters in Paris. We will have by next April around 1,500 scooters, and we are using the transducer from accelerometer from the IoT box from Vulog, and we have extra extra transducer. So we monitor when the scooter is parked, if someone pushes scooter. When the scooter is parked, if the scooter falls down, and when people are driving, we are monitoring if the scooter lie down during the trip. So during the trip, we immediately call the user, and if he can answer, it's just to say, apparently you had a problem, what happened? So it allows us to avoid people who have a crash to park and the trip and go and say it's not me when we discover the problem. So by doing this, we manage to get 80% of all crash invoice to the user. And for problem happening when the scooter is parked, which happen often when a car trying to park and push our scooter, we invoice fleet guys to check the scooter immediately. So this allow us to have a fleet in operation most of the time. And we have problem also in Paris that because the space for parking scooter are limited, sometimes a private scooter owner remove one of our scooter to put his scooter and leave our scooter on the side. So it allow us to react quickly to have the scooter properly parked. Or in case of fine, to be able to say it's not the last user who has badly parked the scooter, but it has been removed between two trips. So we have a dedicated fleet of a team to manage all that. We try to be very reactive, which allow us to have a very limited number of scooter ending to which is taken by the police every month, and it decreases the cost of that. we are not suffering as our competitor while using a Chinese, Taiwanese scooter with a very bad supply spare part. We have more than 95% of our fleet which are in the street operating all the time. So we have we are quite good on that. And obviously when you operate scooter, you don't have the problem of damage inside of the car or people behaving very badly. You avoid all that. You don't have problem of cleaning the car for smell and all that. Obviously, you have other problems. We have the shit of the pigeon on the scooter when it's a season. The cleanliness of the scooter is very important because people will choose a scooter that are clean all the time. So this is very important to have clean scooter. And our commitment toward the municipality of Paris and also toward the Yamamoto in Japan is that we have a security check of all our scooters every 3 days. So every 3 days we go on our scooter. And every year we do a complete security check of the scooter in the workshop. That's it.
Every month, what did you say? Every month? No.
Every year it goes to the workshop for a completely stripped down and rebuilt. And every 3 days it's we have 10 points with that we check.
But connected with the annual obligation to do that?
Sorry?
Do you have this obligation to do?
Sorry, can you hear me? Yes, right.
Yes.
Sorry. But do you have the obligation from law-wise that you have to do that once a year? You have to? Or every 2 years?
Basically, it's a commitment we did to have a high standard right at the beginning. And funny enough, we managed to do it without being too complicated. And also, now that we have a swapping battery, it's also the rate that we swap battery. When we will have a complete fleet, we will be swapping around 900 battery every day. And with the autonomy and based on around 5 trips per day, it's the maximum that we will be able to do.
That's exciting. The last point I wanted to cover as part of this session was bad debt management. We are running extremely late. Sorry for the poor time management from my side. So I propose anyone who's interested in that topic to take that around dinner tonight or after dinner if you're interested. All right? Thank you. Any other question before we take a break, I think?
Yes, yeah. We'll